There we go. The Drive is live. We are live. A little reaction Monday and a heck of a sports weekend. A big one there for U of H as they go on the road to Allen Fieldhouse in an improbable victory. They get a dub there. The Rockets, they went out and backed up their win at home against Cleveland and beat them again, this time with Evan Mobley. So, yeah, big sports weekend. Oh, and then football happened too. And Channel View Zone is back in the Super Bowl.
East Side
to face those damn Chiefs. Fuck, can't shake them. Can't shake them. Thought it was Josh's time. I thought it was. Well, I know so many people did. Thought it was Josh Allen's time. Not yet. Clint Sterner in the building. Tyler Milner in the building as well. We appreciate you. You know how to get yourself a part of the show. 713-572-4610. Those of you on YouTube and Twitch, do your thing as well. I just think, you know, this is the easy one way out, and I think it's a good conversation starter. Off of the biggest thing that happened in sports last night is we see the Eagles, and I'm watching Saquon Barkley just feel like he ended the game right when it started.
That dude.
It's just Mr. 60-yard run.
Saquon.
As we see, they win the early game, blowing out Washington, and then the Chiefs. They defeat in another classic with the Bills. They win 32-29. And I guess this is the way to start. You all can jump in with your thoughts here. Clint, you've said these words yourself. Hey, we've heard a lot from Kirby. Hey, we're close. We're close. Like, we're close. We're right there. We're close. They felt like they needed to make a move at the OC position and offensive line coach position. We'll get into that more. But we're close. Did y'all feel like the Texans felt like they were close to what we watched last night between Kansas City and Buffalo? Did you feel like they are headed in that direction?
No. I mean, headed in that direction, sure. Yeah, I mean, they've gotten significantly better over the last 2 years.
Not close to be able to play and compete.
I mean, them two teams scored some points, and I mean, it was a battle, man. It was a battle. The play callers, particularly on the Kansas City side of it, were unfreaking believable. The clutch plays throughout, really on both sides of the football, were huge. The quarterback play on both sides of the football found a way to impact the game in a major, major way. The teams have the ability to overcome mistakes, turnovers on downs,
general. This is your meaning in terms of the Texans being ready.
I think the Texans are ready to play at that level if they go in there and everything goes their way. They don't turn the football over. The game plan's just right. Major swings. The truth of the matter is, when it's a heavyweight bout like this, you know, you've got to be able to counterpunch, and I just don't think the Texans are there yet, particularly on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah. I'll even say, with the exception of the offensive line, which is granted a very big deal.
Yeah.
But with the exception of the offensive line, I think talent-wise, you could say to yourself, yeah, I think the Texans can roll with them.
Healthy.
Yeah, they're healthy.
Healthy, yeah.
The arrows pointed up.
I'll be honest with you, though, that damn near that receiving core that the Texans rolled out there might be able to do what the Bills could do. This Matt Collins character, I don't even know where that guy came from. Did you see how he dressed?
Yes.
Walking into the game?
Yes.
Tyler, did you see how Matt Collins dressed walking into the game?
No, I missed that.
Please, look it up.
Okay.
Just look up Matt Collins.
Tyler, you'll like it.
Oh, Tyler will bust out laughing.
You may be Matt Collins for Halloween next year.
Yeah, you may. He is. It used to be he don't wear shoes, but this guy's taking it up a notch. No, I think talent-wise, because, you know, especially from, you know, the Chiefs' perspective, there was the secondary and the pass rush. That was night and day from what they faced with the Bills and the Texans. The Texans were clearly better defensively, especially in those spots with the Bills, yeah, than the Bills were. Now, the Bills' offense and everything, but I think the big separator and taking the offensive line out of it, right? Like the Chiefs obviously couldn't just tee off,
yep,
and get 8 sacks on them like they did last week. It's just the experience all around from the whole organization, from coaching to the players, the experience and and just being ready to play in that game seems to be the big separator.
Yeah, look, there's something about having been there. There's something about not blinking. There's something about being able to answer the bell. And now, look, Josh has come up on the short end of it, but Josh scored 29 points, and you can argue, getting turnovers on downs and then getting stopped right there at the end of the game on downs. I mean, he was close a couple of times in the fourth quarter to scoring 30 plus against the Kansas City Chiefs, one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the game. And you're talking the play caller was tremendous at times. You're talking about the quarterback play was next level at times. You mentioned the offensive line play, whether it's in the run game, or the pass game. You talk about just playmakers, whether you're talking about Cook, you're talking about Mac Hollins. There's up and down the board here. Those two football teams last night were on another level than the Texans are. Like you said, I agree with you. Healthy, I think roster wise, just talent wise, you can match up with damn near anybody. But as we see,
healthy, the Texans receivers and secondary is probably better than both those.
Well, teams. As you see, the Chiefs prove it every year. Is you don't necessarily have to have the best roster. You can change identities. From year to year, to hell with what Brady did, where he had a 10-year span in between his two runs. I mean, they changed identities offensively and didn't miss a beat, right? And flipped their offensive roster with the exception of a couple of guys and didn't miss a beat, right? Like those teams are on a different level. Again, whether you're talking about the identities, particularly on the offensive side of the football, or the play callers, again, particularly on the offensive side of the football, or just the stars that go out and make plays to the tune of scoring 30 points or even more than 30 points. Like I just don't think the Texans team, and again, particularly the offensive side of the football, I don't think that unit is ready at this point in time to be on that same field as those guys.
From the text line, it looks like, how could you say we're not close? We played two tight games with the Chiefs this year and beat the Bills.
I mean, the Chiefs have won 17 one-score games now in a row. They played a lot of tight games. Everybody that played a tight game with the Chiefs doesn't get to say that they're on the same level as the Chiefs.
Didn't have a protractor out
there. There's something about going out there and, I mean, what? Like I'm telling you, man.
Either one of the Chiefs games, I never felt like the Chiefs didn't have control of the game. Like either of the two Texans games.
I agree. Very comfortable.
Like it was, it's like you said, the Chiefs play weird stuff. Like for instance, you said they more, like in that game against the Texans, like they didn't even really attempt to even get receivers involved. They were just like wide receivers. It was just, Kelsey, bam. And it was like, all right, it feels like the Texans are just potentially going to make mistakes, and we're just going
to
let them.
But Ron, think about to the texter that just texted or whoever it was. Like, think about the way these games unfolded. Like, look, just look at the Chiefs and the Texans. Forget the score. Like, the scores, as I've said, I'm so tired of hearing about one-score games, whether it's good for the Chiefs or bad, good last year for the Texans, bad this year. I don't care about all that. Forget that. We're talking about winning versus losing, right? If you look at the Chiefs, they're playing chess, and a lot of teams are playing checkers. Look at the Kansas City Chiefs and the Texans game, the most recent one. Andy Reid was content with his speed guys staying out wide and just staying the hell out of the way and letting Travis Kelce do work in the middle of the field and playing really, really good defense. And on the flip side of that, the Texans, the game came down to it, couldn't protect a quarterback.
And he knew
it. And I'm not talking about once or twice. I'm talking about three straight plays on a drive where you got to have points. 3 points or 7 points. Like you can't protect. And it's been the same problem that you had all year long. So when we're talking about, like, one team is playing chess, and like last night, we're looking at it right here. Andy Reid messed around and ran the damn zone read play and let Pat Mahomes keep it for a 12-yard or 15-yard touchdown.
Same play, ran the first play, but he handed it off.
With the game on the line, yeah. Right? I mean, they're spending time working on those kind of situations. We're still trying to figure out how to not let two free runners come off the right side of the quarterback in a critical situation. We're still trying to figure out how to not get Dalton Schultz on George Karloftis two of the last three snaps of the ballgame. Like that. That is chess versus checkers. And so that's all I mean when I say the Texans aren't on this level. I think defensively they are. I think defensively they're ready to rock and roll when they're healthy. Now, offensively, I think –
except for the small things like the adjustment on Kelce. Like
sure, that was piss poor. Like, yeah, I agree with that. But there, even with that, if you're – And when you look like now, I don't like to look at it and go, oh, well, what? Well, you're still forcing them to be somewhat of a slower pace. You still got them in a little bit of a funk. You've blown a couple of coverages and allowed Travis Kelce to do too much work, but you still feel like you're not getting beat. You feel like you're right there with them. And then the offense can't do anything in clutch time, right? So it's just one organization at this point is playing chess, the other still playing checkers, and you just got to catch up.
And Buffalo too. Buffalo is, you know, Buffalo's a stronger and a different team than when the Texans played them earlier this year. But talent, like that's the other talent wise. I don't think the Texans healthy are far off at all.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You can argue they may be better.
Yep.
In a lot of certain spots. But it's a different animal that they may be able to get to next year.
Well,
we saw the Bills flip it.
I tell you, you got to get a bona fide game changing offensive coordinator in here. That is an absolute game changer, and everything I just said, I think falls by the wayside. You got an identity. You know exactly what you're going to do. The first time you talk to, hey, you know, look, here's the deal. When you hire that guy, whoever that may be, there's a proven track record that if guys like Bobby's been talking about just execute, then you will win. What he's asking guys to do, the scheme, the play design, whatever that offense, we've seen that work to a high degree in the past. Okay, we're going to hire one of those caliber guys. And then you look at it and you go, okay, is Laremy Tunsil the kind of guy that can make this happen? Yes, let's ride. No, got to go. Right? I mean, that's you got guard, center, guard. You probably got to find two of them this year. Right? What kind of guys are they? What are you looking for? This offense to look like that guy that we're talking about should know exactly what he's looking for.
Now, I will say last year, you lose to the Ravens and you see our Ravens Chiefs there in the AFC Championship game. You're like, all right, how can we get closer to that? And I think you did. I think you got, even with the injuries, as I said earlier, it feels like it may be a little cheated with the injuries, but with the injuries, you got closer. Can you do it again this offseason? You see the range you had to get to, can you get there? That's the big thing. But no, there were some great games yesterday, and like you said, that Bills game, that was a classic, both of them. It felt like, and I heard this all week from some people thinking like, oh, Buffalo's got the better team, and I was like, whoa, like I felt like a lot of this, what happens to Josh is that Mahomes and Josh are close. I think Mahomes is better, but Mahomes and Josh are close. But Mahomes has walked in with the better supporting cast, right? Mahomes has Andy. Mahomes has Spags. Mahomes, you know, that has a defense that's more likely to make a big play than Josh. So sometimes Josh has to play over what Mahomes is doing to make up for it. And I think yesterday's game clearly was that. Buffalo couldn't quite get the stops that it needed. The Chiefs, who were getting run through in the second half, finally got a couple of stops that they needed. And then, like, there's a thought, is Travis Kelce catch that ball that Dalton Kincaid had in his hands? Like, you know, they just don't seem to have somebody make the play outside of them that kind of helps. And I think that's the deal with Josh has come in with the lesser cast and hasn't been able to make up with, especially in these tight games.
You know, I thought, obviously the Chiefs I thought were the better team, even coming in, which we now know. But to me, the reason I gave Buffalo a shot, and I thought this was going to be a game, was because I love what Buffalo's doing offensively. You know, I've talked about this multiple times. Like, I just don't think you're going to go out there and just drop back and Joe Burrow, Cincinnati Bengal your way through Kansas City. I know he's the only one that's done it now, so I get that. But I just don't think you're going to go out there and roll all that kind of risk out there, not with Spags on the other side of the ball and the way the Kansas City Chiefs defense is playing. So I thought there was a chance, the way they use his legs and the way they'll Like coming out of halftime, they just said, we're finna run this.
But that's the problem. It took them so long to get to what they want
to
do.
Well, to me, the biggest mistake in this game, I think the game swung in a huge way when they were up 1 point and got stopped on fourth down. But when you look at the Chiefs in the, I mean, the Bills in the fourth quarter, like, why did they ever snap the football at all? Why did they ever snap the football with Cook not on the field?
They were doing it a lot.
A lot. And the commentator kept, oh, you know that they rotate their backs through. And I'm thinking, hell, the last drive, they started off tossing the ball to their RB2. And I'm thinking, man, we just saw the game changer and the playmaker that Cook is. I mean, it took
them too long to get there.
Oh, man.
They come out, and Josh, and there's another difference. The first drive, Josh seemed to be jittered. He tried to throw a pick in two of the first three throws.
Yep.
Right, but what they have done is run the ball. They've been running it down the throats, and then finally in the third quarter, they're like, "We're gonna run it down the throats." And then it took them too long to get to it. And then the fourth quarter, once they lost the lead, then they stopped. They stopped again. Right, it was just crazy.
Yeah, it was wild that they ever took him off the field, and they did it multiple times in critical situations. And I thought after he scored the touchdown on fourth down, I was like, okay, it's blatantly obvious. Like, that dude's the best weapon you got on the field. Get the ball in his hands any way that you possibly can outside of the quarterback. And you look up multiple times, multiple critical plays, he's standing on the sideline. I'm just like, how in the hell do you justify that? That's the one thing with the Bills that I had to look back at and go, wow. Boy, you got to regret
even
that.
The threat of him, if you're still going to do the tush push.
Yes.
Even just the threat of him.
Yeah. Like, the threat of any of it. Like, what if he, and I know Shakir's been good for him, what if on that last play, right, we ended up having to throw it up with two free runners in his face, what if the little motion guy with the swing, on the little swing route.
Shakir was open.
I know, he'd have got the first down. But what if, that should have been Cooks. In an ideal situation, if you're trying to get your best guys on the field, that he's got to be on the field in those kind of scenarios. So, I don't know, man. I just, your best guy's got to be on the field when it matters the most, and it seemed like the Bills failed in that category several times yesterday.
Yeah.
Last night.
They did. All right, coming up, Ryan Pressly, that move was finally made. Mm. He lifted his no-trade clause, and he is going to the Chicago Cubs. Does that mean something with the Alex Bregman situation? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Those Astros, they're kicking ass and taking names.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Hey, welcome back to The Drive as the Super Bowl is set, and it should be a good one in New Orleans. And also, Clint, we'll be down there as well. We will be there coming up. We will be on Radio Row all week. I heard Sean and Seth talking about it. Heard the fellas from In the Loop. We will also be there thanks to our great friends with Flight by Yingling. They will apparently. I heard Sean say he's gonna run by there and get some drinks.
Get some cold beer.
Get some cold ones there from our good friends
for our trip over or what?
Oh. I don't know about that. It may be sitting there for a trip over.
What? I mean, are we going to act like you ain't ever loaded up an ice chest and headed to the hill country? I don't know why you can't do it going New Orleans way.
I mean, I don't know.
I got a driver. I don't know what y'all are talking about.
It's still illegal in the great state of Texas,
my
friend.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, I didn't know that either. Yeah.
Open container?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got popped a few times going to the river.
I'm just like, oh, this man's it. He said it's illegal.
Hey, man, get you a cold beer and a koozie, man, and just relax and enjoy
the ride.
It'll
be in there.
Man.
It won't be open.
Come on, man. What the hell are we doing?
We got it. We got it for the trip. It'll be a good time. But our great, great sponsors helping us put it together. Low T Center, Exclusive Furniture, Mo Karam, Injury Lawyers, and everybody there helping us have a good time and give you the best content we possibly can. At the big game coming up in New Orleans. Don't want to miss it. We'll be there. And crazy, crazy guests that we will have. It'll be a fun time. And we will try to bring you the best that we can coming up next week for the big game in New Orleans. We'll be down there having a good time. And, last year the daiquiri count thing got away from me. I won't let that happen again. Are you sure? Yeah, I will not.
That was a lot of fun for me who didn't get to go. No, that was a blast.
Well, look, I mean, I know 36 to 38 or something like that. New Orleans is not Las Vegas, but I'd imagine things can get away from you out there.
See how many of those hand grenades you can get down.
I was gonna say I feel like I could get some daiquiris there.
Mm-mm, you better be careful in New Orleans, man.
I want a live counter.
That was the first place. Like one of the first places I heard about them drive-through daiquiris that you could just through New Orleans, Louisiana.
They just put a little tape on the top of that straw.
But I'm not. You live and you learn. Get experience.
Tyler, I'll have one downing by the time we get by the time we hit New Orleans.
No,
I bet we'll stop in Lake Charles.
No, I'm not doing it.
There you go. Okay, that's okay.
No,
clearly there's no open container law in Louisiana.
Different world.
Carry a roll of tape and get pulled over. Just put a piece of tape over the mouth.
They put a tape on the old straw.
It's sealed, officer.
Sealed. We gave it to you sealed, fool. All right, now, but it'll be a little sipping on a little cough medicine. See, it's sealed, don't you? Well, hell, it looks like it. You got it filled up halfway. Yeah, I didn't want to fool.
Old tape job.
Good shot.
Sir, your tongue's red. All right.
Well, I'll have a blast.
But no, big move here. When we left, it looked like the Ryan Pressly ball was in his court. The Tigers were an option. They dropped, and then it was the Cubs. And he did finally lift his no trade clause, and he has been sent to the Cubs. Now the thought is this something that opens the door for the Astros to bring back Alex Bregman? This from Chandler Rome. He said, one thing to clarify, the Astros were intent on dumping Ryan Pressly's salary all winter, reported it in November. This was not necessarily a reaction to Alex Bregman's availability. The two things just happened to coincide over the weekend. And then here is the latest here in the last hour from our MLB insider, John Heyman. He says Astros are trying to bring back Alex Bregman. They're still willing to do it, at least at the 6 years, $156 million offer they had earlier. But one reason Bregman declined that earlier is it was a cut from his $28.5 million salary that he had played under last year. They said that there may be another team that's willing to go 6 years with an opt-out. Among those with interest, the Cubs, the Red Sox, and the Tigers. So that is the absolute latest there with Alex Bregman. I really feel like the Astros are in a quandary because I wonder how fired up they are about, like, especially now they've made these plans about bringing in Bregman for 6 years, $156 million. Like, do they, like, after the decisions they've made...
Is Breggy being ridiculous?
Like, I understand where the reports are trying to get... I wonder how gung-ho they are about really wanting him to come back. That's what I wonder. I thought there was a way to wonder... Are they just kind of doing this, especially to appease Altuve and really kind of let the fan base know we tried, we offered, but now, like, do they really want to come up off this 156? Do they really want to make this move? I do think when you look at the lineup, Clint, it makes them a better baseball team, but I do wonder if this is really where they want to take this thing.
Yeah, well, look, I don't think that it's where they really want to take it, or they would get it done. I mean, clearly the market has shown that the Astros original offer is at least entertainable, or at least according to reports. But so if they really wanted to get it done, they would get it done. Look, I think you also got to take into effect, you know, this weekend Joe Espada's on record saying, yeah, look, anything's in play, Bregman's in play, and then Dana Brown quickly told the reporters, like, yeah, the door is cracked, but re-signing Bregman is an absolute long shot. So, I mean, the general manager's right there. I mean, he's telling you that it's an absolute long shot.
His words have been a lot different on the Bregman thing than, like, Joe or Altuve or anybody else.
Yeah, so, look, I think it's a long shot based on what the general manager said. I think it's a long shot based on the moves the Astros have already made. Again, I think the Altuve and left field talk is absolutely silly. Even though I do believe that Altuve likes Bregman enough that he would attempt it and he would do it, and hell, I think the Astros would probably even win games in the regular season with it like that. But I think that's a tad bit. It's all a tad bit far fetched at this point in time. And then you tack on to it. You mentioned the Ryan Pressly trade. That did squeeze the Astros under the tax threshold. By the way, just in case, just in case you're wondering.
And but so, it would jump them back up if they brought back Breckman.
Bingo. Again, another factor.
Really
another factor to where Crane goes. I got a third baseman. We had a plan. You know what? I think we can roll forward as is. So,
because the reason why I say that is because Clint, it just does not seem there was ever a thought to spend money to get a real outfielder out there. Like, and you wouldn't even have to done 6 years, 156 to get a real outfielder out there. It never seemed like they wanted this plan, and now all of a sudden, this plan not only means we're going to shift our original plan and have people play out a place that we didn't think. Now we're also on top of that going to have to pay somebody $156 million.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Well, it's clear. The one thing is clear, and I think the majority of us, and I'm sure most fans out there in general just aren't on board with this. They're clearly comfortable starting the season with the outfield that leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah.
Clearly. They are clearly comfortable with, can Chaz McCormick get back to doing numbers like he was 2 years ago? Can Jake Myers turn into the center fielder that everybody hoped he would be, where we don't have to talk about his defense and how many runs he saved catching the ball in the gap?
I screwed it up.
And they'll shuffle around left field the way they have with Alvarez and company, and they can win games with that, right? They've made it loud and clear that they're comfortable with moving forward like that.
Yep, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, as you said, that Dana Brown's what I feel like you kind of listened to. By the way, y'all hear Dana? He was talking about the other my man. They asked him about Bregman playing another position. He said, "I couldn't really see myself putting Bregman somewhere else. I mean, I couldn't really see Joe putting Bregman somewhere else." Thought to myself, "You know, you ain't the manager, don't you?" Danny, he corrected himself, but he said, "I can't see myself putting him there. I mean, Joe putting him there." So we'll see how this thing goes. We'll obviously completely follow this and break in when there's news either way. But the Alex Bregman thing talk seems to be getting a little bit more serious. Coming up, there's been some names and some news about the Texans offensive coordinator situation. We will let you know the latest on that and discuss coming up. As soon as we get back.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, a little news and notes here about the OC situation, and we can have some conversations here. Let's tackle the first one. This reports Aaron Wilson, Clint. Texans interviewing their current quarterback's coach, Gerard Johnson, early this week for the offensive coordinator position. He has been instrumental in C.J. Stroud's growth, also in the report. But he is most definitely not a surprise. We had James Palmer on Friday, and he said he is a very serious candidate, and as serious as such, we hear he is getting interviewed for it. Not a surprise there. So that is taking place. This is getting serious. Do you think there's a situation in which, like, he could really blow them away and this could be the next OC?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a chance that he could get in a meeting room. And now everything shifts, right? It's not about being a former player and playing the quarterback position at a high level and being able to communicate at a high level and knowing C.J. Stroud. Now it switches to from an overall play design, game plan, play calling, you know, can you kick next level, higher level? Do you feel like that between your experience with him and the conversations you're having with him now, do you feel like that is the right direction? Is this a guy? Because I do believe and I pray and I hope that this is super important to D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio. And I use Laramie Tunsil because of we all know Laramie's MO and we all know the ripple effect that a guy like Laramie has on the offensive line. Like, whoever this guy is needs to have the ability to command more from Laramie Tunsil on down? Do you is a guy that's been in the building, that's young in the profession, does he have that ability as well? Right? I mean, so there's a lot of factors here with this offensive coordinator hire that I think when you go with a guy that's never done it, you better be surefire about a couple of other things, right? And it's more so about, again, being able to coach the position in individual drill and being able to coach the position in a meeting room and being really close to C.J. Stroud. That is all great for an offensive for a quarterback coach. Means absolutely nothing as an offensive coordinator. In fact, I can argue at this point in time that they need to distance themselves a little bit from C.J. Stroud.
See, that's like, what, like that's
the C.J. Stroud, it runs everything, and C.J. Stroud is the head coach's buddy, and C.J. Stroud, like, you can argue that, hey, man, what this offense needs is somebody that's a little less buddy-buddy with everybody.
Well, that's what I was gonna say to you. What would it signal to you, like, straight up, what would it signal to you if Gerard Johnson got the job? And to me, I could be dead wrong. Not that he's not qualified for it, because I could see him getting the job with the Jets. Hell, he's as qualified as Bobby Slowick was. Hell, even more, Bobby Slowick wasn't a quarterback's coach, right? He was an offensive passing game coordinator. So, like, but the number one thing that I can't help for what it would signal to me is CJ really wants it. Like that, like to me, if it were Gerard Johnson, it would be like CJ really, really wants it. Now, in some ways, like for some people, I think people hear that and say, okay, yeah, CJ should have some real say so in it. But that's the part to me where I don't know if it should be a CJ really wants him. I kind of agree with you. I think it should. I almost think it should be somebody that neither one of them, D'Amico or CJ, have a relationship with, so that person can come in and feel very comfortable implementing what it is that they want to implement and say and do what they want to do.
Agree wholeheartedly, Ron. You can argue that with the Texans offensive coordinator search, high up on the priority list should be, I'm going to rule with an iron fist and I don't want to be anybody's friend. I don't want to be Laramie Tunsil's friend. I don't want to be lenient on Laramie Tunsil. I don't want to be C.J. Stroud's buddy. I don't want to be lenient to C.J. Stroud. I don't want to be anybody's buddy. I'm coming in here and I'm putting my foot down, and we're going to demand perfection across the board, whether we're talking route running or we're talking about the footwork, the mechanics and techniques associated with executing certain blocks in the pass game and the run game. You're talking about chips with the tight ends and being more physical, just the thought of being more physical, right? I don't want to be nobody's buddy. This is how the Texans offense is going to operate. And if you don't agree, if you don't want to operate, if you don't want to fall in line and you don't want to show up and show out and show this level of physicality, this level of technique work, this level of commitment, then you can be a great player, like D'Amico said many a times, it just ain't here. You can move on and be a great player in the NFL, it's just not here if you're not going to do things this way on the offensive side of the football. I believe that high up, if not number one, extremely high up on the priority list, that's what the Texans need in an offensive coordinator, not another guy that is just familiar and close to C.J. Stroud.
The only way it would make sense, and they're the only ones who know, is if Clint, this was just simply a deal where Bobby Slowick was just going rogue, and he was just like, nah, man, I'm to hell with anybody else. Yeah, anyway, I'm rolling on my own, and it was clearly a deal of like. Everybody else wanted to play ball and do what was needed except for him. And that's just got to be the change. That's the only one. But we won't ever know that. They're the ones who know that. But
well, if that's the case, the offensive line coach got a raw deal.
Well, and to me, the reason why I don't know that I lean so much on that is, Clint, if that was the case, then you would have made the move on Bobby Slowick, right? You would have moved on him during the season if that was it. Like, instead of just letting it continue to go in the way that it was. So, I don't know. We'll see. The other part on this, Clint, is Jonathan Jones, CBS, yesterday during the pregame show, talked about Chip Kelly and said Ohio State's offensive coordinator Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly is a top candidate for this job. Listen, Chip's a little out there. He's a little different. Chip's success has come more in college than it did with the Eagles or the Niners in the NFL. But I think he does fit the... Yeah, he's a guy that comes in that I don't think will have any issue ruling and running this thing. He's had experience. He's been a head coach on the college level, the NFL level. He's a guy that can run the show.
Yeah, look, I flipped on my opinion last week of Chip Kelly. It was kind of thrown out there. You threw it out there and it kind of caught me by surprise. And I was like, I haven't heard a lot of guys that really like Chip Kelly. So I don't know if I'd go the Chip Kelly route, right?
I'm still up in the air with it, by the way.
I flipped on it. I think it's more necessary that you get a guy in here that don't take no crap. Right? You just fall in line, get it done. He will not take crap from any players anywhere, no matter how good you have been or how good you are at this point in time. So I've done a 180 on Chip Kelly. I would have no problem at all. I could get completely in on Chip Kelly. I'm not the biggest Chip Kelly fan, but I could definitely get in on Chip Kelly being the offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans. All he's got to do is handle the offense, and he can handle that offense with that iron fist that we're talking about, and can demand perfection out of these guys, can demand physicality out of these guys. Ron, that's one thing he brought to the table, even back in his Oregon days. My man's going to put a run game together. I mean, they're going to put a dynamic run game together. He believes in being physical, and apparently he rules with an iron fist, man. I would have no problem with Chip Kelly being in here and him being the offensive coordinator. So, that'd be solid.
I don't know. I think that the one thing that does help is he clearly, we didn't hear any rumbles or issues with Ryan Day. Now it's 1 year.
Yeah.
We didn't hear any rumbles.
Jim Knowles got his ass up out of there. He already lost his D coordinator, got up out of there, came to the league.
Yeah. So that's that's good. He showed he could work, like he could work with it, right? And I think this is what D'Amico looking for? Does D'Amico want to have some say so in it? Because this is a big move for D'Amico, right? Like this one's got to be right, right? And does he want more say so, or does he legit want this thing to be like Sean McVay? And Sean McVay said, "Here, I'm hiring Wade Phillips." And Wade, it's yours. Or does he want a little bit more input?
Yeah. Look, the D'Amico input thing is interesting. I would imagine he wants to make the decision him damn self at this point in time. The other interesting thing, Ron, about the Texans offensive coordinator search to me is and the fact that Chip Kelly is being brought up, and I don't know how credible it is or not, but just bringing up the Chip Kelly avenue, I do believe that the Texans offensive coordinator search. Or their next hire, I do believe it needs to be go hire the best guy that is willing to take the leap. If that's stealing somebody else's offensive coordinator, whether it's somebody in the league or somebody that just won a national championship at the college level, I do think that this search needs to be wider than just the same retreads that were just fired for underperforming somewhere else or the inexperienced guys in the house. The Texans are at a spot where it is, we're going to go from divisional round to competing for a Super Bowl. And I think this is one place. This is the one place where I think major change could occur and the right hire could immediately push them into that conversation. That would necessitate that would facilitate the necessary change on offense that I believe could put them in the serious talks about truly contending. But you got to go take somebody's offensive coordinator. You can't just settle for somebody in-house or settle for somebody that's available in the streets.
Yeah. We'll see what they're going to do. That's going to be, I think, the number one thing clearly with this football team is where do they go there? Where do they go next? Who is the guy that is going to be working with CJ and putting this offense together? Who is it? We know Gerard Johnson. We'll have an interview this week. The name Chip Kelly has started to kind of circle here at a national level. Coming up. I think this city has a special place to discuss what is starting to be the number one story in sports. We'll do that coming up next.